QT1, man.
Who's the best show here?
That show!
Who's the best show here?
That show!
Good. That's the best one yet.
I am short.
Pizza, pizza.
Just swinging in the breeze.
Big old showtime!
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a little thing tech show, and that's fact. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. There ain't no funny duddies at a Lincoln Bath. But the strolling, go to back to DLNGS.org. And IC channels and Linux.net. Bound tech show. Just sit right there, cause the cast is just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 967 of Links Like Tech Show. I don't know if Pat's back yet. Maybe not. Hopefully he'll be back in a little bit. We have Joel.
Good evening.
And we have Joe.
Hello, hello.
And you guys say you have some Linux and tech stuff, so go ahead, fire it up.
Oh, why don't you let me go first, Joel, because once you get started, you're never going to stop.
Nah.
Okay. Well, the One GX One Pro. It's a little tiny laptop with a i5 10th gen processor and 16 gigs of RAM. 7-inch screen. It is gloriously tiny. It's got 512 gigs of onboard SSD, so, and a slot for more SSD space for 2242 M.2. It is actually like a $1,200 device that the battery when I got it was extremely bloated to the point where like the frame was bowed out, so I only paid $150 for it. And ordered the battery. It took a long time to get to me, like a month and a half to get to me. But I got it. And I got it put in. I got Linux Mint installed. And it is working great. The temperatures do kind of spike every now and again. I assume that's because I need to redo the thermal paste. But that's not that big of a deal and not that hard to do. Now, not only did I install Linux Mint, but I noticed that the screen size was the exact same width as my Galaxy Note 10 Plus, or close enough that it doesn't make any difference. I think it's a little bit longer. So I was able to 3D design an adapter that slides onto the top of the One GX One Pro. And then also comes up a little bit further and holds my phone directly above it. And then using an application called Desk Screen, I'm able to use my phone as a second monitor for this little device, at almost doubling the screen real estate, which is exceptionally tiny at, you know, 7 inches. But yeah, it's a really cool device. I have been enjoying using it a lot. I set up SSHFS on it. I set up X2Go. I'm even using it right now to talk to you guys. So, like I said, it is working great. It is a little warm on the lap when you're using it, but you know, you check the temperatures and they're all within acceptable limits. So, I am really enjoying this little device.
Nice.
Where'd you get it from?
I got it on Facebook Marketplace.
And was this one you repaired, right? Or it didn't?
Right, right. The battery was bloated, and like it had actually popped out a couple of the screws from the center frame. It was so bloated, and like the front frame was being pushed out, and the keyboard was basically a U. That's how bad the battery was bloated, and the guy just left the battery.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I got the thing, and I didn't even drive anywhere. I stayed at that gas station, and I had my screwdriver kit with me because I saw the pictures. And I took it apart, I removed the battery, and I threw it away. Well, I took a picture of the model number of the battery so that I would know for certain what I needed. And then I threw it away. But it went together really well. Nothing was so bent that it couldn't be put back together. The front kind of needed a touch of super glue to stay in place. But other than that, there was nothing extremely wrong with it. The only thing that had me concerned is that, when it had no battery in it, even though it takes 15 volts, there still wasn't enough power to keep it powered on. But the battery fixed that issue.
Was there anything that special you had to do to get Linux on there?
No, it just worked. It just worked.
But I mean, it was just an SD card install?
A USB.
A USB, okay.
Yeah, I used a USB stick. I mean, this thing has two USB-C ports. I think they're 3.1 for both of them, and it's got a USB 3.0 port. So, like, a regular full-size USB port.
Not
plus
bad.
It's got a 3.5 millimeter jack and a slot for a SIM card and a micro SD card.
Okay.
And it's got a micro HDMI out. And I have, I did try to hook it up to a USB-C dock, but I guess the one that I have, the HDMI wasn't working on that, so I ended up using the HDMI output and just a USB hub, and that worked out really well hooking it up to an external monitor. I did have to go through and adjust some settings because I was getting some screen tearing when things were moving quickly, but I started out on 20.2 of Linux Mint, and now I am on 21, so I did the upgrade to 20.3. And then the upgrade to 21.
Marty wants me to call them. Okay.
Nice.
That, the keyboard. That's ahead, amazing. Sorry. I was going to say, the keyboard just bent right back. Or did you have to replace the keyboard too?
No, the keyboard worked just fine. It went back. I mean, you can tell the keyboard that there's a little bit of bowing. But mostly, unless you're looking for it, you can't see it. And it doesn't have a traditional touchpad. It's got like a nipple style one, except it's glass and it just senses your finger moving over it. And you can do left click with that, but you cannot do right click with that. It's got two buttons next to it for that. And evidently you can also buy clip-on controllers for it, like Nintendo Switch style, that slide into place. But they are Bluetooth, even though they clip into place. So you do get some Bluetooth latency. And it is, it's called a gaming laptop, but, you know, the APU, it's not really built for gaming, but it does normal desktop things absolutely great. But I would not use it for gaming.
Well, you could use it for
light gaming.
Candy Crush.
Yeah. Right? I might be able to emulate Genesis on here or something.
Candy Crush,
which would be cool.
Or Stardew Valley.
Yeah. Yeah, and I also... Mm-hmm.
Farmville.
I also... Yeah. I think I'll get a USB Genesis controller and play some Genesis games on here. Just because I'm a sadist.
There you go.
But I also, just with some Velcro, I've got the USB hub stuck on the back. And I will say that with that there, if I slide it down a little bit so the screen will not open all the way, then when my phone is attached to the top of it, it will actually hold it in position so, you know, the extra weight doesn't pull it all the way back and knock it over. But it's a great little touchscreen, too. And the keyboard, yes, it is small, and it takes a little bit of learning to type on, but I've had smaller and worse.
Sweet.
Well, I'm glad that's working out for you there, sir.
Yeah, and considering that, you know, the device was $150 and the battery was $55, I think I came out pretty well considering it's a $1,200 device that I got for like $205.
Yeah, that's actually really good.
That's awesome, man. Repurposing things is tight.
Yeah, and yep. I am debating. Well, with the 512 gig hard drive that's in it, I really don't think I need to put another, you know, 2242 in there. And then, you know, I can also put a micro SD card in there, even though, you know, I don't trust those for long-term storage of anything. But 512 on there and my ability to, you know, use it as a thin client if I want to, or to SSH FS into my server and just use all the storage there, I don't think I'm going to need more than the 512 that's on it already.
I wish I could say the same thing on something like it. Oh, well,
it's not like I'm going to, you know, work from this device. Unless my work laptop, my gaming laptop, and my XPS 13 all die, then I would hook this up to a monitor, and I would be able to log into work with it.
Right.
But that's, you know, a long way down the list.
Cool.
Oh, and I did get, Hybrid Sleep working? So that, Hibernate. I got Hibernate working.
Hibernate, yeah.
So it can come directly back to what I was doing, but if I close the lid, it will go into Hibernate mode and not use up any battery.
That hardly ever works on machines for me anymore.
I generally don't care, but you know. Yeah, I did the dance where I increased the swap file size and then, you know, remove the swap file, increase the swap file size, re-add the swap file, and then add Hibernate to all the menus and add the functionality to systemd. And it's worked most times. Sometimes it'll come back and it won't read the correct location, so it won't load up, but most times it works just fine.
Do you use Hibernate on your other stuff?
Most things, no. My tablets, I will. My tablet's running Linux. I'll
Which makes
definitely,
sense on those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a device this small, I'll set up the Hibernate. Because, you know, it has a history of the battery, I guess, getting warm enough that it got huge. I want to make sure that that's not going to happen.
Okay.
Which is a good idea. Yeah.
Because I haven't used Hibernate in ages.
See?
Yeah. Well, it just seems like the smart thing to do since it shuts off all the power and then I'm able to still get right back to where I was before. And if I'm going to walk away from this for long enough for the Hibernate to turn on, then, yeah, it shouldn't. I would prefer it not to be using all the battery.
Yep. I mean, I'll do something like tonight when I took my when I went downstairs for dinner. I took this laptop I'm using with me downstairs just for the heck of it.
And one other thing that I've noticed that is like really good, and I don't know if it's a function of the module that's in it or if it's a function of just Mint 21, but Bluetooth has worked exceptionally well with the Bluetooth mice and keyboards that I have set up on it. Like, normally you have a problem when you disconnect and then reconnect after some time with Bluetooth on any Linux machine, but it has just worked every time so far with no issues.
When you say, does it just work because you just start using the device and it works, or do you have to repair it?
I do not. I have one of the MX Ergos, the from Logitech, which has a 2.4 gigahertz dongle and Bluetooth, and it's got a button to switch between them. And I literally push the button to switch it to Bluetooth mode, and it showed up, and I started using it. And that happens, like, every time. So I can disconnect it and reconnect it, and it's hooked up again and working fine. It even tells me the battery percentage. So, yeah, I am really impressed with how Bluetooth works on this. But I'm going to have to set up Mint 21 on something else because they did do a lot of revamping of Bluetooth in Mint 4.21. So try and figure out if it's the module inside the device or Mint 21 itself.
Here's a question that just crossed my mind. And maybe it's stupid, but I never thought about this before, but is it possible to pair a Bluetooth device with more than one system at a time?
Yes.
Like, so yeah, so if you had a keyboard and a mouse, could you pair it up to two systems like that are right next to each other at the same time?
Well, no. I want to say it's not going to both connect at the same time.
Yeah, the answer to that is actually no, but a lot of your Bluetooth keyboards and mice have multiple Bluetooth settings so that pair to multiple devices separately, and you just have to switch between the different connections.
Is that like a toggle switch or something on the device?
Yeah, depends on my 60% keyboard that I have that's just plain Bluetooth. It's got three different modes. I'll hold down function and Q for the first mode, function and W for the second mode, function and E for the third mode. So I can connect to three separate devices all over Bluetooth one at a time.
Yep, and something like that on my, I think I have the, K400, it's really designed for mobile devices, like to put your tablet or iPad on. It's got a slot in it where you can put the device. It has a dial. So you basically just go 1, 2, or 3, and you can connect it to a PC. I just never do.
Yeah, I guess that would be kind of bad if it allowed you. I can't imagine that would be in the specification, probably say it can't be paired to more than one device.
Right.
Concurrently.
Audio is a little bit different, and it also depends on what device
what
you have. Like
headset
some of
you
them,
have.
Right? Some of them like will literally let you like
connect audio to one and connect your phone functionality to another.
Yeah, it depends. Like I have one that's just for calls, so it's just one earbud and a microphone. Boom, that one. I can literally have it connected to both my phones, and whenever one, when either one rings, it'll pick up. So that works just fine.
Because that's another question. If you're playing like music or something, can you pair more than one set of earbuds or headphones to a phone so multiple people could use it simultaneously?
Something I haven't tried.
It's actually something that you can do on Android phones. You can choose where the audio output goes. You can connect multiple headphones at the same time and send the audio out to two Bluetooth devices.
Right. It's just going to depend on the devices. Like mine, both sets I have will literally take it over. So if I have one set that's in my pocket in its little case and say it vibrates just enough so one bud connects, then it'll throw the audio to that device, which is kind of annoying. But there might be better ways to do that. Now, I know with I have a pair of AirPods mostly for use with my iPad, and the one annoying thing it does is those literally, like, once you connect it to one of your devices, it will literally connect to any of the devices. So it'll even connect to my work phone, even though I didn't originally pair it up with that, because AirPods are just tied to your Apple account. So that's kind of annoying. One feature I don't like about the Apple stuff, beyond the walled garden bullshit, but, you know. But those are AirPods, and ones are, I think, are special use cases. I am somewhat thinking about getting the new Google Pixel Buds, the Pixel Buds Pro, but I'm not 100% sure I want to do that. Just because I don't see how it would be any different other than costing more money, because they're like $200. Now, if I had $200, I'd much rather get a B-Link computer. Which those are really nice. They're very similar to a NUC.
You know, when I was thinking of that, one of the things that crossed my mind was, I guess keyboards and mice do not do two-way communication, right? It's just
one way.
Yeah, one way. Now, I wasn't quite sure. You know what I mean? I'm like, is it? Could they be? I mean, are some? But it didn't seem to make sense that they were.
No, you can get information out to a keyboard, but that's usually like firmware information or to tell it how the lights operate. But the you are correct that mostly it's just sending a signal to the computer.
Yep. Headsets might be a little different because you might be able to press a button on the bud to like pause the music or to switch tracks or something like that. That's like the new, well, any of the Pixel Buds, you can set one that you tap it and the assistant will come up. Which kind of could be handy if you're just roaming around the kitchen or something, you know, and you're listening to music while you're cooking.
Yep. But even then, yes, that is two-way communication, but it's usually with a headset, it's your computer that's continuously sending signals to your headset as opposed to like a keyboard continually sending information to a computer.
Yep.
That's all I have about headphones and keyboards, but there we go.
Yep. I might have to look at that, one of those computers. I just put the link in the Mumble, from B-Link. They're essentially NUCs, or it looks like a NUC, but they're pretty cheap, depending which one you get. I figured something like that. It's like, let me think. spend $135 and get a Raspberry Pi 4, probably the 4 gig model, because I kept the 8 gigs are kind of rarer than hen's teeth. Or spend a little bit more and get something like this and be able to run more stuff in Docker. Because I am running a lot of stuff in Docker.
Yeah. It might be worth it to, you know, look at the Orange Pi or the the Pine boards.
I'd also like to get one like that has a true gig Ethernet connection, just to increase the speed. Now, granted, whatever speed my Pi 3 is fine. Over the weekend, I found at Walmart in the cheap Blu-rays one package that had all three Smokey and the Bandit movies, even the bad one with the where Cletus was a bandit. And I ripped those and put them on my MB box, and MB just picks them right up. Basically what I ended up doing was I mounted that drive on my laptop that had the handbrake on it. And then I basically had the output go right to that drive. And then whenever in batched it all, so I did handbrake, did all the conversions to M4V for me, and they batched them, and they just automatically appeared in the MB. And once one movie appeared, I started watching it, then same thing with the next one. I just watched that one in a row, and I ended up watching all three movies, which was a little crazy, but, you know, hey. It kind of tested my theory, and those are all streaming 1080p. I haven't yet figured out how to, I need to get a different Blu-ray drive in order to rip, the 4K HDR, Blu-rays. It is possible now where it used to not be possible. So, but at that point, I got like, several that are 4Ks that I would like to rip and put them on that machine, because I'd much rather use MB to watch the movie than put the Blu-ray in the player. Which do have one of those. Mom and Dad got me one for Christmas one year, but I rarely use it. But work today, actually work all this week, we are implementing pipelines, and we're using some proprietary code in the back end for the pipelines, but I did a lot of work with Visual Studio Code. And the kind of nice thing about using that versus other editors is, one, it's actually multi-platform, so it'll run on Linux, it'll run on Mac, it'll run on Windows. But it also has just a metric ton of plugins. Like, for example, when I built the firmware for the board I got last year from my 3D printer, basically building Marlin, I just built it right from within Visual Studio Code. So this week we were using it to edit a deployment.yaml file, which basically set up a pipeline that will upgrade all of our messaging servers. It's a proprietary piece that talks to Colleague as well as the RabbitMQ server that's on the same box. It's that stuff's usually fairly lightweight, so we don't have to worry about Rabbit going stupid nuts. But so we've set those up.
Why do you say Rabbit's lightweight?
Because that's how we use it. It's just not. It doesn't put a lot of heavy load on the server. That's all.
Right, okay, so there's not a
it
lot.
Can.
Of,
yeah,
there's not
it
a lot
can.
Of messaging going through for it.
No. Well,
how many Rabbit nodes do you have running concurrently?
One per client. Well,
you only have one. Oh,
technically
okay.
Two. Yeah, technically two per client, because we'll have one in prod and one in non-prod. This week we're working on non-prods.
So you only have one, but what I'm saying is, like, our RabbitMQ cluster is five servers.
Okay.
So what do you, you just run one server?
Yeah, basically. Okay.
Well, yeah. I guess that, then that's why it's probably not, like, heavily, you don't have, like, tons of traffic going through it.
No. What it does do, like, in our ERP, there is something we call a vision data exchange, which is essentially a trigger. So what'll happen is somebody updates a class, you know, like maybe they change some times on the class, all right? Then that's going to trigger a transaction that goes to Rabbit. Rabbit will then talk to the EMA service that we're working on updating this week. And then Rabbit will, once it's passed that transaction to the EMA will then put the data in the cloud tenant that we have, and then it'll report back to colleague and said, this is done. All right, essentially. You know, greatly simplifying it. Okay.
Now I have a question for you before, because now we're going down a rabbit hole here.
Right.
Mr. AWS man. I don't know. I'm sure AWS has this. Google has PubSub, which is a messaging queue system. And we're moving out of RabbitMQ for PubSub stuff.
Right.
And are you, is that on your roadmap too? I know you guys are doing a lot of AWS. Are you planning on
not that I know of. I mean, we could go to AWS SQS.
Okay.
Which is basically their messaging service, but I think we're kind of using it differently than a lot of people would use Rabbit, you know? So it's quite a bit different. Plus the fact is the pipeline we're using is also being used by another team that this whole setup is designed to work on pretty much any of our ERP platforms. Although we do have to customize it for ourselves because there's a lot of, the other ERP requires Oracle for the database and it has a lot of, it's like whenever you build a Tomcat application for that ERP, you have to put in a bunch of extra arguments, into the, web config. I think it's web config. Or, no, EMS config in our case, but we have to put more, when you do it for the other ERP, you have to put a lot more stuff. We have different architecture, so we don't have to put as much database stuff into that config file. But so what it ends up happening is we updated all those files, and in the process of fixing some of the ones that didn't work, we generally had to go back to the deployment YAML and update it. So we basically branched off from develop, made the modification, then merged back to develop. And once it merged to develop, the pipeline kicks in and just does the work, does the upgrade, does the deployment, whatever we're doing. So it got a lot of experience with Git. You don't have, you know, obviously didn't have to use Visual Studio Code. I could have used the standard Git pull request commands and stuff like that. In fact, actually, when I did the pull request, I just did it in the on the website. So, the upside is once we go right now, we're kind of going through a lot of pain with it, because we're kind of under the gun to get this fixed because it's actually fixing a vulnerability. It generally, once we get through this first round of it, when we release a new version of it, it'll be much easier. So basically just merge to, basically branch off the feature, update the files, merge back to development branch, and then it'll just deploy the new versions. And it'll deploy against our entire client base that uses this application all at once. But because a lot of these were deployed by hand, it's a shit show whether what kind of environment the server's going to have. So that's kind of the things we're kind of tracking with the pipeline itself. Things written in Python, I think. So I didn't write it. But we're all kind of working together as a team to get this stuff we're done. And hopefully by the end of next week, we should have everything patched up. So, but it's been taking a lot of our time. So the other thing I did get to do this week was some interesting AWS console work. Not hard. It's click ops mostly. But we discovered, looking at our servers, we had several for a lot of our clients that were not in use. Some of them were like deprecated services. Like we had an ILP or intelligent learning platform, application that basically would pass the class information up to an ILP system like Blackboard or something like that. Well, the new version is all SaaS. So we don't have to host those servers anymore. So once they migrate to the new version, those servers are obsoleted. So what we did was we took an AMI in AWS, which is, it's all done with clicks. You can do it with automation like Ansible or something like that, which is Ansible is how we do it. But in our case, cause we just had to get it done pretty quickly. We were just doing it all with ClickOps. So we shut down the instances from AWS console after we did the AMI, and we wait like 7 days before a cool off period. So basically that's so that, you know, making sure that we don't get any alerts, from our Datadog monitoring or anything else, or any other tickets from the client say, hey, you guys shut that server down. I need it, you know, that kind of thing. So after that, we go through 7 days with no issues, then we go in and terminate it from the AWS console. So, the nice thing with AWS, it literally has a feature that will prevent you from terminating an instance. So the first thing you have to do is disable that. And then once you disable that, you just right click the EC2 instance and say terminate. And it'll terminate the EC2 resource as well as the EBS volumes that are tied to it. So that was very fun, and I like doing that. I might have to help out with some more of those because we had a whole list. We have a whole list, and that's something we're going to start to be more diligent about is making sure that if an EC2 resource is not being used, that we shut it, we basically terminate it, because if we don't do that, then it's going to incur a monthly cost. And depending on the instance, it can be pretty high, you know, like $1,000 a month or something like that, depending on the, what kind of instance it is. So, but that's life working in the cloud.
Do you ever have a problem with AWS moving your, or having to terminate and recreate your system?
We have an alert, I believe, that monitors CloudWatch for that kind of thing, where right. Like they'll have bad hardware on their side.
Yeah.
Right? And all we have to really do is reboot the instance, and in the process of rebooting the instance,
it'll shift it,
right, and we don't have to think about it. So once the alert hits, there are I don't know if we're handling that automatically yet, but we'll try to schedule the reboot during one of the normal maintenance cycles so that they're not taken down.
Right.
But it does happen. We have actually had hardware go out in the middle of the day. Like, go out. Not often, but it has happened.
Yeah, but with like 95% of our systems, it's not a problem. Except right. When it comes to like a cluster-based system, like Couchbase or RabbitMQ. If there's right. Like an emergency thing that they have to shift off.
Right.
That hardware, that really, and it causes a forced reboot.
I mean,
That could really screw up the cluster system.
Yeah, I was going to say, technically, it will automatically do it if we don't do it manually.
Uh-huh.
We usually choose to do it manually so that we can schedule it, you know, so that it just doesn't go down like in the middle of the fucking day, you know. But yeah, it does have. We literally have Slack integrations that'll when that hits, it'll pop in that channel so that everyone knows about it. So, and usually what happens is my Bangalore team takes care of that for me. I don't have to worry about that too much, but. But AWS is been really cool working with it. What kind of one of my favorite features that I've been using with it is Athena, which is basically it's a query tool that can query both like a I think it can query a RDS database, which most of our stuff are SQL databases for that you know that are queryable that way. We can also do, I don't know if it would work with UniQuery or Unidata or not, because we have a good number of hosts that are using Unidata database. But the nice thing about Athena, though, is you can have it also, you can write queries against an S3 bucket. S3 is storage. I don't know what they would call that on Google. The nice thing about S3 is that it works in any AZ, so there's no AZ, you know, it's not tied to an AZ like an EC2 instance would be. So, in most, we use two AZs. We have US East 1, which is in Virginia, and then we have US West 1, which is in Oregon. So, and it just depends which one is the primary for our client. We have some clients in both. So, and the idea is, as part of our DR, is we will, if there's a problem in US East, we want to be able to fail over to US West. So, kind of an important thing, too, when you're doing that kind of AZ transfers, is that you make sure that all of your applications are configured to use fully qualified domain names. Because when you make the transfer from one AZ to another, the IP address probably will change. So when you use the right tools, it'll update Route 53, which Route 53, if you're not familiar with AWS, Route 53 is basically AWS's DNS. Okay? In the fallover process, it will update that. So your application will continue to work at the right web address, but it'll have a different IP address. So, but fortunately, we never had to do that outside of a DR test situation. So it does work. We use, I'm trying to remember what we use. We actually, because you can do it with AWS tools, but there are also other tools that make the job easier for you, so you don't have to do the specific things. I think one of the reasons why we're using a lot of external tools like that is that I think at some point we're going to look at becoming multi-cloud, so we might use another cloud hosting provider as backup or something. So that we can go to something like instead of using AWS, we can use Google or Azure. So, if we went to a second cloud, it would probably be one of those two. I don't think we'd go with a proprietary cloud somewhere else. Well, man, they're all three proprietary clouds, but something that's out of the top three. You know, I don't think we go to that. But I'm learning more about the cloud all the time as I work in this team, been on the team for about 2 years now, so that's great. Actually, over two.
Yeah, there's always doing interesting things to learn there, isn't there?
Yes, sir. I learned I really hate HashiCorp Vault, but
why do you hate Vault?
I think the biggest thing for me is whenever you just want to move something from one folder to another, it's a pain in the ass, especially if you're using the click, the web interface. I'm sure you can probably write commands to do it somewhere else from a command line, but
yeah,
I hardly ever do.
Yeah, I wrote a script to do that.
Right.
So that, yeah. I
Sometimes I just want to click a button and create a fucking folder, you know?
One of the things I found, what is it? Like, to get a secret, to get a secret isn't very intuitive. You know what I mean? The path to the, so the path to the secret can be, it's like a one to many relationship.
Right.
Like, well, okay, so the secret holds the key value pairs. So if you want to get like one of those key value pairs.
Right.
It's not a simple, you know what I mean? It's not complicated, but if you try and look through their documentation, it's not apparent, is what it is. It's like you could do a vault read, but then that's going to give you the entire list of key value pairs.
Or if you have something like, for example, this is actually something I learned this week that if you're writing stuff, you know, if you're writing, I'm not writing a ton of the stuff that does the deployments yet. But what some of the smart things that my teammates have done is things like, for example, we wrote, we have a Slack bot that was written in Python, where we can actually, issue in a certain channel in Slack, we can issue a command that will do things. Like, for example, one of them looks at one of our internal applications and checks its version number. All right, so you can just use that bot command to do that. The other one we have is an audit. So we audit a particular pipeline, so it's going to look at all the things that pipeline needs and make sure they're okay. Like, for example, it looks at HashiCorp Vault and says, hey, I can find all the pieces, parts that I need for this pipeline to be successful. Or it looks at the S3 bucket and says, oh, there is the certificate I need to apply to the ALB or something like that. Okay. And it looks at all those pieces that pipeline needs and produces a report in the Slack channel. That has been invaluable, especially for figuring out, do you have everything in HashiCorp Vault where it needs to be? In a lot of cases, when I was going through the ones I was working on, they weren't. So I had to move shit around a lot. Now, I use a JSON view constantly in HashiCorp Vault when I'm doing that kind of work by hand, because it's easier to, you know, like, I'll look at one entry that is how it's supposed to be, and I'll say, all right, I'll copy that JSON over and then just change the, like, for example, the fields that have the username and password, I'll change those to be what they should be, you know. And that tool was just so awesome. And I recommend, like, if you're doing any kind of pipeline work, no matter what kind of pipeline you're using, you know, we're doing a lot of proprietary stuff. The same could be said if you're using some other sort of pipeline, like maybe CI/CD or something like that. Or one of the ones that Dan's talked about in previous shows. You know, it'd be useful to do that just to make sure that before you do that merge to develop or the merge to master, that everything is as it should be. So that way you don't have to go back and run it again and again and again. And these are all the pipeline's item potent. So if it was successfully run or upgraded before, it's not going to do it again. So, which is also important. So, but I'm learning more and more about this stupid shit. Like, this day, as time goes on, it's like, And you think it's bad trying to find open source documentation? Try finding it for something your own company wrote. I know you had an experience like that you talked about last week too, Dan, I think.
About what? Sorry, what?
Didn't you talk about something that you wanted to deploy last week in the there was no comments in the code, you couldn't figure out how you were supposed to run it or something?
Oh, there was, yeah. No, that was last week. That was a utility that was run that wasn't well documented and
yeah.
had a little problem with it that ended up deleting everything. Yep. When it was only supposed to delete a few things, it deleted all the things.
Yep. Yep. That's like, now we almost got, we've done the East Coast for the work that we've been doing this week. They're almost all done. There was one left when I got off today, and our main engineer was going to look at it and see if he can't figure it out. But after the pipeline ran multiple times, I'm going in this thing and I'm looking at, like, it has symlinks to Java all over the freaking place. They were all fucked up. It's like, yeah, and then I logged into their prod, which we haven't touched the prod. I logged into their prod and I looked at it. I said, "Oh, I'm betting development is just like prod, and it used Java 7, and our new version of this service requires Java 8." it's working with crusty servers that were not built by a pipeline.
Oh. New development. We got JoJo into virtual school, so he will be attending virtual JoJo. School this year. My son attending virtual All school.
Right, he dropped out. I couldn't hear.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you fine. Your JoJo's attending virtual school this year.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear that. For some reason, it dropped out for me. Cool.
So yeah, that'll be fun. Nothing on it. They are definitely enforcing using Windows because they want you to use Outlook 360.
Right.
Basically everything proprietary. So
did they give you a laptop or do you have to use?
They did send a laptop that we will be okay. using, but JoJo also was able to get another laptop. I know I mentioned it on the show before, but it was a while ago. A really nice MSI gaming laptop that he got for educational purposes. But the school wants him to have a backup way of connecting. So I need.
Makes sense.
Yeah, they want us to have a backup either laptop or tablet that'll do the job, and then they want us to have a secondary way to connect to the internet, which we do.
Yep.
But I've had my primary and my backup fail this year, you know, what, a month ago, 2 months ago, maybe 3 months ago, where, you know, the Spectrum went down. But because of where it went down, T-Mobile also went down. So I had no internet.
Oh.
Yeah.
See, right now my backup's phone. But what I'm thinking of doing is possibly doing Starlink for my backup. But what I would probably do is see about going with the, they have the home base service where you have to have stuff installed, like, you know, like an antenna screwed on the side of the house, you know? Or you can do something like the RV version, which that's probably what I would do. So that way I could take it with us when we go camping and stuff. But,
cool.
Starlink, the big spend on Starlink is really not the monthly service, but it is the hardware cost, because you had to purchase the hardware outright. And I think it's about $500 for that. But then it's a little bit, I think it's a little bit cheaper than Spectrum is for me. So.
Well, what are the speeds? Are they comparable?
Comparable, actually. Yeah. So, like, there's several van lifers I've watched on YouTube that have the Starlink thing, and they're seeing between 400 and 500 down, which is more than enough for secondary. I mean, mine's currently supposed to be a gig, but I will typically get between 500 to 700, so it's great. I mean, the only thing that if I did that, then probably what I would do is I'd probably store it and not use it unless I have to. But what I may do is something like, in those situations, I have to figure out a way how I can get the antenna outside. So I'd have to think about how I'm going to do that, because I'd like to get it up here. I guess I could put like a temporary tray. I would have to pop the screen out, which I don't really want to do, but I can get some, put a little tray where I can put the antenna on the tray. The only thing is I'm not sure if it would be in view of the satellites. So you do have to have a relatively open area from what I've watched and listened about, but it's simple. It points itself. You use an app to connect to it, and it will literally point itself. So you don't have to do like what people would do with DirecTV. But I think I would definitely, for the backup,
I
would probably do that.
Yeah, I remember having DirecTV back in the day.
Yep. I don't know if it'd work. I don't know if it'd work back in the house. Probably not. But it'd be worth a try. But I guess one thing I'm wondering is if I got a second main node for my mesh network, if I can use, like, basically park that downstairs somewhere so that when I do need it, I can just go and connect it up and throw it out the window, you know? But I don't know. I had to think about that. I know my wife probably will balk at me spending that kind of money, so it's probably not going to happen, but...
Yeah, well... Also, you'd be getting a service as a backup that you would almost never use.
Monthly pay, yeah. Yeah, there's that. Well, see, that's the other thing I'm wondering, too. If it's like with... both of our cars have the 4G Wi-Fi in it, but I... One nice thing that I can do with it is I can call up...
Well, then your car is your backup.
Well, there's that. You know, I don't know if it'd work, if I could reach it all the way in here.
Hey, you know what? You get a router, and you turn that into a repeater. You can use a tomato or whatever other firmware you want on there, and then you hook that up with an Ethernet cable to... your other router, and it's providing internet, and the house, the rest of your house is hooked up the way it's supposed to be.
Well, that would include me actually having a call OnStar and turn it on.
I thought you were already paying for that every month.
No,
anyway.
I don't. No, the only time, like, we had it in my old one that I wrecked last year. When we were driving to Texas, I had turned it on. Because at that point, we were, we're still on a shared bandwidth plan on my phone. When my wife gets a new phone, we're going to come off it, because I'm going to go to 5G on everything. But on the trip down to Texas, I had them turned it on. It uses AT&T. The cars use AT&T. But you do, if you have an AT&T plan, you can just add line and add the car to the line. All right. But I don't. So in that case, I turn it on like when I need it for a long trip like that. And it worked great. I just told Luke. Well, actually what I did was I set up the car Wi-Fi, since it was 2 gig only, I set it to match our 2 gig spot here. That way, if you already had it on your phone, it just connects right up. So, and it worked beautifully. I checked bandwidth the whole trip, And as long as we were driving, Luke was on it. So, because he loves like to watch YouTube videos when we're driving.
Well, who doesn't?
Well, he can watch them. I can't.
You probably like watching them while driving.
Well, see, here's the irritating thing about Android Auto. Android Auto, obviously, out of the box, unmodified, doesn't let you stream.
And obviously, within 10 minutes of it being released initially, someone had modified it so that you
could
watch videos.
On the screen, right. But I have premium. To me, they should have an app, like a premium app, so that you can turn it on. Because there's a lot of things on YouTube that I don't need to see the video. I just want the audio. Because there's a lot of people that record podcasts
right.
on YouTube.
Yeah.
So.
That was the great thing about YouTube Advanced until, you know.
Right. Yeah.
Google killed it.
Yeah. But what you can do instead, what I can do in the car is. And what I usually do is if I'm going to listen to something like that, if it was already pre-streamed, I'll download it to the phone and then just start it like I used to on my 2017 on the phone, throw it in the dash, and then at that point I could switch over to Android Auto if I needed to, just to get the nav, all right? And it would still play fine. So it also highlights the other beef I have about Android Auto is that when you're in Android Auto, if you want to listen to the satellite radio, like I have sat radio in my car, when Android Auto is on the screen, it takes over the screen. And there's no controls built into either.
So it doesn't even let you listen to any audio?
No, it will, but you have to set it. And then go back to Android Auto. You can't see what's playing unless you look at something like I can switch my one, my cluster display. Yeah. I can switch that to the radio. Then I can see what's playing and stuff like that. Yeah. Cause all of them, including AM FM, have some sort of RDS service that will show you what song's playing on the radio. So, but I don't honestly use the satellite radio that much. Technically, I can. Instead of using the radio bit in the car, I can stream it via my phone, and that works fine in Android Auto. I can flip-flop and back and forth. But then, of course, I'm using bandwidth on my phone. But I think that's going to change relatively soon. I know Apple's already working on it with, I think, on iOS 16, where if you have the right kind of car and your car supports it, not only does it work on the entertainment screen, but it literally will take over every screen in your car, including the gauge cluster. So everything will look like CarPlay. All right. You'll still have speedometer and all that jazz. But even better.
That sounds like a nightmare. I think I've had that nightmare before.
Yeah, possibly.
Where all the screens turned into Apple screens.
The one thing they're doing, and I think Google's working on something similar, is you can control the environmental controls and stuff via the touchscreen, which that, my car has that, but it doesn't work within the Android Auto framework. So, that might change. It definitely is changing on the iDevices. But you'll probably have to have a certain kind of, you know, certain car or certain system in your car in order for that to actually work all the way. But
yeah, well, I keep seeing news about the thing that you were talking about last show with Mercedes and their heated seats.
Yes.
And needing a subscription plan.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the dumbest thing ever.
Totally.
I will pump electricity directly through those heating coils. Just cause.
Oh, yeah. I think some tuners have already figured out ways around it, too.
Oh, my God, that is so dumb.
Yeah, but it's just, yeah. It goes back to everything from right to repair, right to own your own things, man.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, I can understand if it's a service, but really, heated seats? Literally a heating coil that you put right. electricity through.
There is a reason I find Blu-rays and rip them. Because yeah. I don't necessarily trust my purchase on Google Play Music to be there.
Well, yeah, okay, Google Play Music. But there are actual instances of, like, Apple, just as soon as they no longer have a license for a movie anymore that you purchased, guess what? It's no longer available to you because they don't have it on their servers anymore.
Well, that actually, I was going to say, that happened to a book I bought on Amazon on the Kindle. I bought the New International Version of the Bible. Ironically, I don't even use it anymore because I raised a lot of heck with Amazon, and they gave me a credit so I can what happened was
see what happened is
the publisher brought out an updated version of it. So rather than just giving me the updated version, it took it off my device entirely.
So that way you'd have to buy it again.
Basically.
And it made the old version unavailable.
Zondervan is the publisher, and that's irritating to me. Especially for a publisher that specializes in Christian scripture books and stuff like
well,
that.
Well, I'm wondering, considering, you know, the age of the material, and the what did they change?
They made some updates to formatting in some cases. They did actually make some textual updates to get a better translation. They didn't change the meaning of it. They just changed. I don't really read the NIV much anymore. Anyway, I'm on other translations now, but I still will every once in a while. But now I just use.
What you're not a big fan of the King James anymore? Which one are you doing these days?
I use a paraphrase usually called the Message, which is basically rewritten in modern English.
I was checking to see if you had switched over to the Book of Jehovah.
I use no. that's one. I really read multiples. That's one I'll read. I'll read NIV. I will read King James or the New King James. New King James is kind of like the Message. So it's translated so that it has less of the these and the thous and stuff like that in it. So, but I read multiples because each one gives a different meaning to me. It's not.
Oh no, textually. I can understand that. I can understand that. The different translations providing slightly different meanings based on the translator's idea of the meanings.
Yes.
No, I get that completely.
Right.
But, a guy just providing small updates that aren't really necessarily updates.
Yes.
And then bricking the old version and.
Is crap.
Yeah.
Yeah. I totally agree. Yeah. I get bringing
you see
out
that
new
happen
versions.
With textbooks quite a lot.
Yes.
And you colleges, do. You know, lock things in that way. I find it a little bit more offensive when it comes to religious texts.
Me too. Because to me, once you bought it, you should.
Being forced to buy the new version for college is one thing, but taking away the old version and just making it poof disappear, that's a whole different thing entirely.
Yep. That did happen. Like I said, call, complain to Amazon. Amazon gave me a credit, and I went and bought the next version for nothing. So.
Nope, I'd have been done with that bookseller.
Put it this way, I don't really buy many Kindle books anymore. Anyway, I will occasionally. There's certain things I want to read, actually, a good example is we're having a book club. Called Five Dysfunctions of a Team that we're reading and we're supposed to be reading and then talking about it in the club.
Of a team or a teen?
A team.
Okay.
T-E-A-M. I got that on Audible because it is the most dry reading shit I've ever read.
It sounds exciting.
Oh, it's thrilling. Don't get me wrong. It has a lot of great ideas. It talks about working better as a team. And I get that, but it's like, okay, when do I read that? Okay, I'm busy working on YAML code and doing operational stuff all day. And I'm supposed to read this in the evening. In the evening, that's the last thing I want to do. You know?
It'll help you, like, fall asleep.
Basically. Yeah, like tomorrow I'm planning on watching She-Hulk when it comes out. Because basically that's the only new stuff on TV.
Instead of reading your workbook?
Yeah. Well, if I would just, like, all I need to do is, like, Saturday would be a perfect day. I can turn that book on my earbuds while I clean the house.
There you go.
And it's only, the Audible book is only, like, maybe an hour or two. It's not a long book, really. But it's just like it's the last thing you want to read. You know?
Wait, I do have a question, though. I mean,
right
now, did your work recommend you read this or say go read it?
Say go read it.
Did they buy the book for you?
In this case, they did.
I was going to say. I mean, yeah, they said they pay for the book.
Right. I temporarily put my corporate card in long enough to buy that book on Audible, and then I took the card off. That's one thing I'm very careful with, is that corporate card, because I do have one.
Embezzlement? It's mostly you're very careful with the embezzlement?
No. Because it'll put receipts automatically go into our expense system, so yeah, they'll know about it. But so I don't keep it, like I have used it to order things like Uber Eats, or, like when I was in, good example, it was in 2017 when I was in Springfield, Massachusetts. I had one day where I got stuck in the hotel room all day because it was snowing outside, like I'm not talking just a couple inches, I'm talking like, you know, 8-9 inches, you know, stuff you don't really want to drive a rental car in an unfamiliar town. So I just used the app and I put my corporate card in Uber Eats long enough so I can get myself lunch and then took it out. So very careful with where I put that card. They will occasionally, like every once in a while, our manager will say, hey, we got a long day, long set of training or something we're doing. You can get lunch on me and expense it. And I'm like, okay. So I'll put it in Uber Eats long enough to order my lunch and then take it out so I don't accidentally charge it.
Your entire Amazon purchase on there?
Some cool retro stuff I'll be working on soon.
It's not closed.
As soon as it gets from Poland. There we go. as soon as it gets from Poland, I have ordered from Lotharek.pl a SIO to SD system for my Atari 800XL. So essentially what that is it will let you can get both games and applications in a format called ATR, which is this developed to use with emulators and stuff like that. And basically they're floppy images in the Atari floppy format, and you put them in a folder. Well, you can have, there's one folder that expects to be on the SD card called Atari. Then underneath that folder, you can put, like, I got a folder for games and a folder for apps and stuff, such and such. So you have that SD card loaded up. You turn this thing on, and it has buttons on the front. You can select which floppy image you want to load, and then you turn on the 800XL, and it'll load it off the SD card just like it was a floppy drive. So, and there's a ton of ATRs in archives online, both in, I found them in, there's one website in particular, it escapes me for the moment, that I found them on. They also found a lot of those on, Internet Archive. There was a lot of those images too. So, but I gotta wait for it to get here from Poland. Cause that's where Lothrek's at. It's about $70. Once it makes the translation from Polish money to U.S. dollars. I had to look and see if he's got anything for the Apple IIc as well. But we'll see how that works. And hearing what you were talking about 3D printing something, another thing I thought about, the 2C has a rarer than hen's teeth now, grayscale LCD. And I thought, self? Couldn't you just go buy one of those, LCDs on Amazon that have a composite input and use that with your, 2C? I might do that. And maybe try and 3D print a frame so I can attach it to it, yeah. Yep, I might do that. At the very minimum, if I don't have like print 3D print a frame, I can use the one it comes in and just set it on top of the 2C to use it so it don't have to hook it up to a TV. Cause it doesn't put sound, there's no sound out on it. It just comes out via the speaker building in the 2C, or you can also plug headphones into it. So something I might have to do, as well as maybe order some Apple IIc compatible floppies if I can find them, because they're 5 1/4. But it also makes me wonder if they have the same thing for the old TI-99-4A that Dan used to have.
Yeah. Still have it.
Do you?
Okay. Yeah,
does it still work?
I assume it does. I've not hooked it up in a long time, but I'm looking at it right now, the box with it in it.
I'd never heard of some of the, like, just some of the retro videos and stuff I've seen on YouTube about that machine is some of the peripheral, the really expensive peripherals that nobody ever had that I heard of. And I thought, man, it'd be cool to get those. Like the, I think there's something called the, PEB or peripheral expansion box, which was really expensive back in the 80s.
Oh, the big black box with,
yep.
That, I think
it had, like, you can put expansion cards or memory in it or something else. I have to remember what all you could do with it.
That thing was expensive. You could, well, most of the peripherals that you bought for the TI-99-4A hooked into the side of it and then daisy chained off of one another.
Right, yeah.
But the peripheral expansion box.
It's about the size of an old school PC. Yeah, it's expansion slots in it and a power supply. And it had the flex cable interface that attached to the actual computer. Yeah, and you can add the serial cards and other stuff like that to it. Nobody I knew who had that computer, which wasn't, I think I knew maybe one person that had that computer. You. But that wasn't back in that time. What I do remember though, is I do remember playing with it in like one of the stores, cause that's the one thing I liked that they did in the 80s with the, especially with the home computing stuff like the C64 or the Ataris, is they would set one up in the store and you can play it. And unlike the same kind of things they do now for, the Nintendo Switch and, the PlayStation, it doesn't have a timer on it back then. So you could stand, like the whole time mom was shopping in a store, I usually would just play with that computer the whole time. Didn't know what the hell I was doing, but I'd play with the computer. So, one more retro note. I did pick up Atari Flashback Classics for the Switch. It's fantastic. It's my favorite game cartridge so far.
Yeah, that peripheral expansion box is bigger than the damn computer itself.
Oh, yeah.
That was huge. Yep. I didn't have it.
I didn't have a floppy drive either back then. I had a cassette drive because that was cheap.
Yeah, I had the cassette for the longest time until I did get a 5 1/4 inch floppy drive.
And I never knew why. Now I know why the most Commodore 64 floppies as well as the Atari floppies were so damn expensive. They had 6502 chips in them. The same chip that was in the computer was in the floppy drive. So no wonder it was so expensive. It's kind of the one smart thing Apple did when they were developing the Apple II line is their drives are relatively dumb, and most of the smarts for their drives are built into the 2C, Apple II expansion card for the floppy. So, but, yeah, that's why the old school home computers, floppy drives were god awful expensive. Many times more than the computer sometimes. Depending on when you bought it. So for my Atari, after I get the Lothric box, the only thing I might want to get for it after that would be, they do the same thing, but for cartridges. So it's a cartridge with the SD card slot, and when you first turn it on, it loads up a menu selection, and then you just choose the image, and it loads the image into the system and goes. I forget the name of that one. I think Lothric makes it too.
Yeah, something like that gets made for a lot of systems.
Yep, yep. Well, nowadays, yeah, because you got old farts like us who want to play with the, who have nostalgia for those games. But like I talk about the Atari Flashback cart, I literally can play the arcade version of Asteroids on it. So, I mean, as well as the 2600 version. I think I can play the 5200 version too. I mean, there's tons of games on that, and they're all teeny tiny, and they load fast, and I love playing them. Including Adventures on it, too, for the 2600. Where you were a dot, and your little arrow was a sword. And the dragons looked like ducks.
And you fought a giant duck, I was about to say.
Yep. So I have that, I have the Namco one, and I have in a download version, I have the Capcom one, and it has not every, I don't like the way they did the downloadable version of the Capcom one, because it only comes with one game, and then you have to buy each and every other game that's in it, which kind of sucks, in a way. In other ways, it doesn't, you know, at least then you don't have to buy shitty games. But yep, you can even play the old school, the old school combat on the Switch. You slide the Joy-Cons off, so one Joy-Con's a joystick for player one, the other is a joystick for player two. So you can pop the prop out and play it on a table that way. Or you can probably do the same thing on the TV adapter for the Switch. So, but good purchase, good game purchase. I think it was like $25.
What was the game you played the most on it?
So far, I played a lot of Yars Revenge on it. That was really good. And I also played Asteroids the most too. I realized once I played them side by side, played one round arcade, then another round on 2600, I realized how different the 2600 version is. It doesn't seem like it at first, but it really is different.
Wait, what game are you talking about?
Asteroids.
I was going to say, I didn't know they had a Yard's Revenge arcade game.
No, they don't have the Yard's Revenge arcade. Right. But, no, Asteroids, the arcade version, the Asteroids kind of semi come towards you and can come at most any direction. The thing I noticed about the 2600 version is the Asteroids all come from top of the screen to bottom of the screen. And I don't know why that is. I never noticed it when I was a kid, but I notice it now.
Wait, what do you mean by that? They start at the top and go to the bottom?
Yeah.
All right, so they go, like, horizontally. I don't want to say horizontally, but diagonal, right? From top to bottom?
Yeah. Yeah, so they eventually, like an asteroid that starts out on the left-hand side of the screen, it will go down and reappear a little bit further to the right and a little bit further to the right as it does its loop. All right. And that's just something I noticed when I was playing the other two versions. I mean, granted, I still love the 2600 version because it has all the sounds that I remember from my youth. But I need to look and see if they have a Activision version of that so that I can get things like Pitfall on the Switch.
I think Activision does have one.
I think they do, but
I don't know if it's on the Switch, though. Another question, though. Wait, when you said the arcade version, the asteroids come out, do you mean that the asteroids come from the sides of the screen into the middle?
Kind of, sort of.
Yeah. I think I know what you're... So there could be one starting from the bottom heading up towards the top, and one from the side kind of being just a little more horizontally either top or bottom. But with the 2600, it is all of them starting going from top to bottom.
Yep. It's a little more chaotic. Yeah, I think it's a little more chaotic.
In the arcade.
In the arcade, yeah. One game I wish it had, but it doesn't have, is Blastroids, which is really the third sequel to Asteroids. And I love that version of the game. But it does have the Asteroids 2 version, so it has that.
Wait, is this only the Atari stuff that came out on the Atari 2600?
No, okay. It has arcade, 2600, and 5200 games.
Did Blastroids ever come out on the 5200?
No, it was arcade only.
All right, so do they have any arcade games that are not in on the 26 or 5200 in the collection? Okay.
Yep.
So why didn't they include Blastroids?
I don't know. That one was great. It came out late 80s, but I remember playing it the most in the 90s when I was in college. Like if I go to, there was an AMC movie theater on Hamilton Road, not far from where I stayed at in my apartment when my brother moved out with me for a time. And as I was waiting for the movie, I'd go in the theater. I'd never buy any food then because, hell, I was a college student. I was broke. You know, the only reason I went to see the movie is AMC would give a discount to students. So I just showed my college ID and got a discount. And so as I was standing there waiting for the start time of the theater to open for the movie, I played some Blastroids there, and I loved that. Was an awesome arcade game, one of my favorites. But I love the flashback cards. The Switch is, if you don't want to dick around with programming joysticks and stuff on RetroPie or something, that's absolutely the way to play retro games is the Switch. Probably might be able to do the same thing on the Steam Deck too. Which, I'm not gonna lie, I kind of want a Steam Deck, but I don't know if I want to spend that much money in a game on a system like that.
It is nice.
Oh yeah.
Doesn't Joe have a Steam Deck?
I don't think he does.
No.
He probably wants one.
Yes. If they're free.
That's right.
Another
That's
couple right. of years, you'll be able to pick one up and broken off from the
right.
Facebook
secondary market.
To fix it. Yeah.
Right?
Huh. Yeah, I'll gladly fix one. I mean, yeah,
yep.
The Avenio probably has better stats, but it's also like double the price. So.
Yep.
And,
yep.
you know, the Steam Deck does run Linux out of the box, and the Avenio runs Windows out of the box, so.
Yep. Yep.
All right, we got to wrap this up.
Yes, we
yeah,
do.
Yeah, it's getting late, and I am dog tired.
There we go. All right, I'm going to play us out. We will see you in a week. Have a happy. Oh, you know what I didn't say, Joel?
No.
You know what happened today? Today, my wife went back to work.
Awesome.
She is now working as a instructional assistant at a middle school here for 7th grade.
That's the grade my son is in.
Yeah,
I'm
look
sorry.
At that. She, they were like asking her to go back to take a teaching position. And she's like, I'm not ready for that yet. And she has to finish her master's. And so she's just, she wants to get preparation and get some, you know, more learning experience, practical learning experience in the classroom before taking on the full responsibilities of a class. But it's weird because she's like gone now during the day. And starting next week when everybody goes back to school, I'm going to be like the only one in the house again.
That's just going to be terrible.
It's going to be weird. I don't know. Anyway.
I don't know. It's great when my family goes out when I'm working. Because it becomes quiet.
Yeah. All right. Here are your promos. We'll see you in a week. Boom.
I am short.
Boom, boom.
Oh, my God.
It's Hacker Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Hello, my name is Matt, and I started a new podcast called Lead Breakdowns. I talk about Linux and general technical topics. To get the show, visit LibreQuest.org.
Can we talk about the new search of computers?
Can we talk about multiprocessing?
Can we talk about Beowulf clusters?
Can we talk about Web 2.0?
Just talk geek to me.
Just talk geek to me.
Hey, it's BP. Please come check out my podcast for my take on all things geeky. You can find us at www.talkgeektome.us. That's www.talkgeektome.us. Thank you.
Just talk geek to me.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
Just talk geek to me. I think that's gone now, though, ain't it?
Yeah, I think I played the wrong one.
Man. Who cares? It's a blast from the past, and the promos from the past.
Yeah, I was like, oh, wait, where did this come from? And I'm like, oh man, it's been a while.
Living vicariously through my sister-in-law. She does this thing. She is really in the sweepstakes. Over the last 2 or 3 years, she has won in a travel trailer, like a camping trailer. She's won, I think she won a TV. She's won a whole bunch of stuff. Well, this month, they're redoing their backyard, Bush's Baked Beans, is remodeling her backyard. They put in a hot tub. They're putting her in this huge patio. And I'm a little jealous.
Wow. I'm, you know, that's,
yep.
That's interesting. How many of those has she won?
See, well, she won that. Another one she won is she won a kitchen makeover, which now is just about complete. They had the backsplash doing it. That one was more of, they could have somebody do the install work on it, or they can do it, and that's what they chose to do. The only thing they didn't install was they bought, like quartz or silestone countertops, which just got installed in. But it's been taking them a long time to get that stuff installed.
Right.
So it's
right.
Just about done. And they did, and the way it worked out with them is they basically gave them money, and they were able to do more than just the kitchen, because they ended up buying enough flooring that they can redo the entire downstairs flooring. So she's got new flooring, and of course had more than enough paint that they can paint the whole downstairs as well. But like their house is almost, I mean, it's very, very, remodeled. It's an older house. Like her house is so old that it had intercoms installed in the wall, which was a thing, what, 60s, 70s, I think.
Right.
You know, but, they're still in the wall. It's funny. But now if they, see, one of the options they could have done with their backyard makeover.
A whole Hawaiian pizza yourself?
Yes.
Did you make it or buy it?
I bought it.
Oh my goodness.
I was feeling lazy today and hungry.
Was it good?
Oh, it was so good. 2,200 calories, well worth it.
You calculated the calories for that?
Yeah. Why wouldn't I calculate the calories for a binge?
I don't know. At least you enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean a post-show bike ride in the works?
Well, I don't know. I had a bike ride last night, and it only ended up being like 7 miles instead of 10 miles, just because I was, and it was a super slow 7 miles, and I was just dog tired by the end of it. That's part of the reason that you know, I had a whole pizza, because I just gassed out and had zero energy. So sometimes you gotta refeed a little bit, take in them extra calories. Whatever excuse I need to make to eat a whole pizza,
there you go.
You know, it's a good one.
And there's Joel.
Joel doesn't need an excuse to eat a whole pizza.
That's the bad part, yeah. I got some DevOps stuff to talk, well, pipeline stuff to talk about today, so.
I have some interesting Linux shit to talk about, too. Not DevOps stuff, though.
Rich, can you just go suck it? I've been mashing a stupid update button ever since Monday on my phone. Because the Android 13's out. But Verizon hasn't released it yet.
Just go buy a new phone with it installed. There you go.
I don't have a new phone with it yet. This is the newest phone they got for that. Until the 7 gets released.
Well, I've come out. I went to go check for a system update, and there is one. I didn't really want to do an update, but...
I'll say that should be, we got a 4 or 5, then that should be it. Yeah, that should be it. Android 13. One important note, not that you would switch back, but once you go to 13, you're not going back.
Why would I want to go back?
Yeah, that's the key. You wouldn't. There's a lot of good stuff in it. Probably not as drastic as
Have you actually tried Android 13? Is it any good?
I have not yet. I'm waiting for the thing to come out, but I've been reading a lot about it since Verizon's being tight-lipped with the update. Well, I don't know if it's Verizon or Google, but I could try. There is an OTA image. I could try that, but I'm not so sure how it would work on my Verizon phone. Usually you have to go with the Verizon images, but it's mostly a radio thing.
Oh, look at that. It is Android 13.
It should be.
You want it so bad? And I'm like, I could wait a little bit longer.
I wouldn't say want it so bad. There's just
you
a lot of bugs.
You want it, Joel. I know you do. You want
well,
it so bad.
There's a lot of bugs that are fixed in it. They're like fixing over 150 bugs.
Says, I can, installation will continue when the device isn't being used. Tap to install now, tap resume. I don't know.
Resume. You're not using it now.
I should plug it in though.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea.
My luck. I have like 90% battery. It'll start to install it and then it'll be right down to.
The one thing that I've read about, haven't tried it yet, but the one thing I've read, obviously, one thing I've read about that I really, really am looking forward to is that when you install a new app, the first time you open it, it'll say, hey, I'm going to send you these notifications so you can say, fuck off, you're not. Instead of waiting till the first notification hits and pisses you off, press it and hold it and turning off the notification. The thing that annoys the hell out of me is when apps start sending me, like, advertising via the app, you know, like, or other, somewhat other, like my washer will say, hey, you can put baking soda in with your wash and it'll smell better and stuff like that. It's like, yeah, I think I've been doing laundry for, what, 40 years now? I think I know how.
How why are you getting that? What apps are you using
that is in the LG ThinQ app, that particular one, because that's for the notification when the washer or dryer is done. So whenever a load finishes, I get a notification on my phone.
It gives you a notification and then an ad?
No, it's just like a notification and a tip right after the notification.
Well, can't you turn the tips off if you don't want them?
On that particular notification, no, I don't think. It's just a minor annoyance. It's not super annoying. It's just, I'm like, you know, can't you just tell me what I want to know and that's it? You know? But I'm pretty good. You know, if an app pisses me off too much, I automatically, like, the most annoying ones are when games will say, send you a notification after you haven't played it for a while. It's like, yeah, I don't need a notification when I'm not playing the game. You know, those can be shut off. I don't care. When I want to play the game, I'll go play it. I don't need you reminding me to go do it. Remind me to waste time. Anyway. But yeah, there's a bunch of other stuff in it too. You know, I don't want to talk about it too much because I really haven't tried it yet, but you know. Hopefully my next week we'll have it.
Why are we echoing from you, Joel?
I don't know.
Joe, say something.
My mic was muted.
Yeah, I know your mic
just
is.
Just a second ago.
Well, you know what? It wasn't that.
You know what?
What?
That's probably better. because I pulled the boom down in front of my mouth.
Yeah, there you go, because now it's not echoing.
Yeah, now we're not getting the echo.
Yeah, I had it up by my head, apparently.
Alrighty.
It's because I bought a new Bluetooth headset for my work laptop, and I'm not using this one with it anymore.
Alright, so it's 967.
Yep.
Alright, we're ready for the count around, Joel?
Yep.